The review has allowed me to ask the hard questions and to explore all the different options, along with my national security team, our military and civilian leadership in Afghanistan, and our key partners. And given the stakes involved, I owed the American people and our troops no less.
That was President Barack Obama delivering his new strategy on the war in Afghanistan last week before cadets at West Point and justifying how he came to that decision. Now, new details about how that review was conducted are beginning to come out, and a story from our partners, the New York Times, is in today with White House correspondent Peter Baker. He's written a story that gives extraordinary insight into the workings of the Obama White House and the War Council. It captures the style of some of the president's advisors, how leaked memos and intense debates influenced a three-month-long deliberative process that ultimately shaped the new strategy we heard about just last week. Peter Baker, as I said, is White House correspondent for our partners, the New York Times. He's on the line with us now. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Peter, along with some of your colleagues from the Times, I think seven or eight people who contributed to the story, you spent a lot of time researching the process that led to the president announcing a buildup in the Afghanistan strategy. Now, you describe these meetings in the White House Situation Room with coffee cups and Coke cans strewn everywhere, paper spread about the tables, and a president that you describe as, I think, a cross between a professor and a prosecutor. Bring us inside the room there.
Well, that's right. Look, this was probably the most defining decision that this president has made so far in his administration. And he took a little time with it. He took 3 months with it because every time he thought, his advisors thought they were getting a little closer, he had more questions. He wanted more information. In the end, the intelligence agencies for the country produced 36 separate reports in response to the questions he asked. The Pentagon and State Department bureaucracies produced thousands of pages of other documents. It was methodical, it was rigorous, it was earnest, it was prolonged, and at times for many of the participants it was deeply frustrating.
Now, you've boiled all these meetings down, these War Council meetings in the Situation Room and memos passing back and forth between Biden and Obama, and boiled all them down to one moment that you think was the decisive turning point for when the president was starting to solidify his strategy and where he was going to go on Afghanistan. What was that turning point?
Well, on November 11th, just about a month ago, Veterans Day, the president came from a visit to Arlington National Cemetery, where he had walked through the white gravestones, the tombstones of soldiers and other servicemen who had lost specifically in Afghanistan, Iraq. And he came to a meeting in the afternoon, and they were looking at a plan that would get a surge of troops in, if you will, over 18 months. And they had a bell curve chart showing how troop levels would go up until around July of 2011 and then begin to flatten out and go down. And he said, look, this is just too slow. He says, I want to push this to the left, meaning the bell curve. We have to move them in faster.
So the left means he wants it to start and end sooner.
Get them in faster, get them out faster, exactly. The sooner that we get the reinforcements in, the sooner we can see if it works and turn the security over to the Afghan government itself.
So get them in faster and get them out faster. And what you described is basically the buildup and then the beginning of the withdrawal that the president announced, and then the secretaries Gates and Clinton have been justifying on TV ever since then. And knowing what you know about the War Council meetings in the Situation Room, I want to ask you this. The strategy of the buildup definitely satisfied Secretary Clinton, Secretary Gates, and the generals. And the strategy of beginning to pull out satisfied the president's political base, certainly Vice President Joe Biden, and maybe the president's own instincts. So how much of this was this final decision do you think was cohesive military strategy versus a political compromise that so many suspect?
Right. Well, that's a very good question. Obviously, look, this what they would tell you is politics was not, the driving force in here. But it would be hard not to be in the back of their minds thinking that you had to convince a very wary Democratic Party, particularly in Congress, if you're going to send more troops, that there was some eventual exit. And that's not just crass politics. I think you have to – there's recognition in Washington that if you don't have public support behind a war, ultimately that's not going to be a successful strategy for anyone. So, you know, I think there was a lot of factors going involved. They will tell you that the decision to have a time frame in which they set July 2011 as the beginning of withdrawal has strategic imperatives that would include putting pressure on the Karzai government in Kabul to step up to fight, to recognize that we're not going to simply prop them up forever, to pressure also even the military and the State Department on our own government to say, look, you know, business as usual isn't going to be good enough.
Right, so we're talking about the competing pressures on the president from the side that wanted the buildup. We're talking about Secretary Gates of Defense, Clinton, and certainly the generals. Then the vice president and perhaps Rahm Emanuel on the other side wanting a drawdown and a much smaller commitment to Afghanistan. You know, it kind of reminded me of the factions and the fights during the Bush administration, Cheney and Rumsfeld, perhaps versus Powell and Condoleezza Rice. But in this case, in your story, Peter, the factions don't seem to be at war with one another, not undercutting each other or insulting each other. Do these people get along better than they did in the Bush administration, or have they just, you know, not had enough time to build up their animosities yet because the administration is young?
Sure. The administration is young, exactly. Look, I mean, by the time of the eighth year of any presidency, particularly one which is as consequential and controversial as Bush's, you're going to have the people who've been fighting it out all these years, you know, increasingly bitter. At this point, this is still a young administration. It's only been a year. But they did have some pretty sharp, you know, debate about this. As you say, Vice President Biden was a very strong skeptic of this, even up to the November 23rd meeting where the president really has begun, really settled on his plan. Even then, he's raising doubts. He's forcing skepticism about what he sees on the table. You know, are they personally fractious the way things got in the Bush administration? I don't sense that yet. It's very possible they're just good at hiding it.
Right.
But let's stay tuned.
All right. Peter Baker of The New York Times. You got to read his story on Inside the Situation Room with the President. Coming up, if everybody did a few simple things, it could really cut greenhouse gas emissions. So why aren't people doing it? Coming up later this hour.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.